Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
We're making babies with the master of the National Maternity Hospital, Professor Shane Higgins, is with me here in studio today. Shane, good afternoon. How are things?
Good, thanks, Andrea.
087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. We are talking about the start of labour and preparing for labour. What should people know, first of all, Shane?
Well, I suppose it's a really good place to start here is with the definition. And the definition applies more to women who are going to labour for the first time. And the definition is you have to have painful, regular contractions. And the second part of it is something that can only be established when you actually come into hospital or when your midwife or doctor examines you. And that's a cervix that has thinned out and has started to open up. So a lot of patients will have painful contractions that are coming and going and getting closer together and drifting further apart. That doesn't mean they're in labour. That diagnosis can only be made on foot of a vaginal examination. And unfortunately, that can typically only happen when you come into hospital. So part of the preparation is knowing when to come into hospital.
Yeah. So you'll have your due date. You're more than likely, if it's your first baby, you've gone over by a week, even at least. You probably will get, I would have thought, some guidance though from your gynecologist around when.
You will, although it can still be kind of, you know,
Anything can happen. An
element of uncertainty about when do I go into hospital. And I kind of say to my patients, there's three things. So I know one of your questions has been about a show, and a show is kind of irrelevant in terms of the onset of labour. It's the mucus plug from the cervical canal, and that can appear weeks, days in advance of you going into labour. So it's not a good guideline as to when you should kind of set foot or set off to get into the hospital. But really, for me, it's whatever is happening around the time of the onset of labour, you need to continue to be getting plenty of movement from the baby.
Just explain, sorry, the show.
So the show is a mucus plug. It's a barrier between, I suppose, the bacteria in the vagina and the uterine cavity. And it's there for the majority of the pregnancy. And as your cervix starts to change in preparation for the onset of labour, you can sometimes lose that show, the mucus plug. And you can clearly identify it as a mucusy plug, often with blood through it. But it's not blood on its own. So it is not something that indicates in any specific way the onset of labour or the timeliness of the onset
of
labour.
So it's purely the contractions and the contractions, advice from the medical
medics. And the advice will be if your pains get to a certain frequency and intensity, and typically for somebody who's labouring for the first time, you'd talk about pains that are 3 to 5 minutes apart, that are lasting 30 to 40 seconds and that you can't speak through or you can't, you have to, you know, sort of brace yourself on a piece of furniture. But patients don't have to wait until they get to that level or that frequency or intensity to come in. If you're concerned, contact your hospital.
I was talking to friends who, I haven't obviously been through labour, but I was talking to friends earlier today who have, in advance of this, to try and get a gauge of, you know, what their advice might be if they're chatting to some of the other girls in the WhatsApp groups about to go through labour. What they say their memory is, or their biggest question at the time, was, you know, at what point is the pain so bad that you nearly don't want to go into the hospital too early because you're probably maybe just not sure whether you're actually about, you know, your contractions are the contractions. So it's to try and get some definition around, you know, at what point is the pain threshold so bad that you make your way to hospital?
Well, patients will have varying pain thresholds, but I say to patients if they're coming, so 3 to 5 minutes apart, and where you have to hold on to a piece of furniture or you can't have a conversation with somebody when you're experiencing the pain, and the pain itself is lasting approximately 30 seconds or more. But for most patients, they actually want to stay at home for as long as possible. And if there's any concern or any worry on the part of the patient, they should contact the hospital, see if they should come in earlier. So, for example, if your waters go.
Is that as dramatic as people think?
No, often it's not nearly as dramatic as people think. But nonetheless, it's as important, whether it's a big gush or whether you feel you're just trickling in small volumes. But it's important that you go to the hospital, even if you think your waters are gone, regardless of the pains, because they want to check out that the baby's well and that you're well, because that barrier between the outside world and the cavity that the baby's in is now broken if the waters are gone. The membranes, as it's called. If they go, then it's not that you are on a bit of a timeline, particularly if you're at full term, But it's important that the well-being of the baby is checked, the well-being of the mother is checked. And if you're a first-time mom and your waters have gone and you're not getting any pains, you can absolutely go home and await the spontaneous onset of labour, or come in 24 hours later and be induced.
If you're thinking about having an epidural, at what point do you need to make that known?
Well, certainly discuss it with your healthcare provider in advance of the onset of labour. But if you come into the hospital and you're in labour, it's a good time to at least bring it up with the midwives or the doctors that you're in front of and say, look, I might want an epidural, And again, I say to patients, don't go in with any fixed preconceived ideas, because you might find that you're tolerating and coping with labour very well and you don't need one, or you might find that you're not and you had previously thought you wouldn't have one and then you feel like you're going back on your ward to yourself. Just go in with an open mind, see how you, particularly first-time mums, because they really don't know what they're letting themselves in for until they actually get there. So wait, see how things are going, see how far on in labour you are when you get to the hospital and make your decision. But it's really never too late to get an epidural if you're a first-time mum. If you've laboured before, then things can happen much quicker.
Yeah, because I've heard people say, I was too late to get an epidural, but they might not have been first time, their first time. So
if you look at the statistic, our hospital, we would say about 75% of mothers who are labouring for the first time will get an epidural, but only about 25% of women who've laboured before.
So in terms of the at-home check to see if you've dilated, if you are dilating...
You can't do that.
There's really
yourself.
Nothing you can do yourself.
You have to gauge it on the basis of the frequency and strength of contractions. Say, look, now's the time to come in. Sure, there's a possibility when you get to the hospital that you won't be in labour, and then you have a choice: do I stay in? Do I go home? Do I go for a walk in the park? Or you are in labour, in which case you'll end up on the delivery suite looking to have a baby.
Right, listeners, 40 weeks pregnant, Shane. I had an appointment with my consultant only yesterday. He advised me that if there's no movement by next Monday, he's going to bring me in for an induction. I've been advised to avoid an induction as it makes labour worse. It's my first baby. I'm unsure what to do. What would you recommend? An induction, or should I try? Is it best to labour naturally?
No, so without a doubt, all healthcare providers would say it's better that you labour naturally. But the new guideline from the Institute of Obstetricians and Gynecologists does suggest that all patients are offered an induction at a week past their due date. Now, you don't absolutely need to go down that route. You can say, can I have a few more days? Can I see if things are changing? And that's absolutely fine. But that's the new guideline, but you don't have to follow it rigidly, particularly if it's the patient's preference not to go in and not to be induced. It is absolutely better for you to go into labour by yourself. It's associated with reduced risk of intervention.
Does your age come into account there?
Yeah, it does. So I don't know
what age that listener is now, but...
With the two groups of patients that we kind of, you know, look not to... There's lots of reasons why patients might be induced, but if you're talking about age, it's patients who are typically 40 years of age or older would be offered an induction closer to their due date than waiting perhaps the week or longer over their due date.
Listeners, 38 weeks pregnant, Shane, her second baby. I went into hospital too soon on my first and ended up in labour for 48 hours before the delivery. Yeah. I'd like to labour at home for as long as possible, but I don't want to leave it too late to go into the hospital. So what's the latest I can leave it before I travel in?
It's a question that there's
as
many answers as there are options. So what I would say to the patient is, first of all, second labours tend to be much more effective and efficient. And this is down to what's called uterine muscle memory. So the uterus knows what to do, remembers what to do, and does it very effectively and efficiently. So you can't wait as long as you might have considered waiting in your first. So as for multips, patients who've laboured successfully before, as soon as you're getting really strong, regular contractions, 7, 8, 10 minutes apart, again, depending on how far you are from the hospital, the time of day, the traffic conditions, you might consider making your way into the hospital, because things can move very rapidly for somebody who's labored before. And many patients, not most patients get to the hospital, but several patients will deliver in the car, on the roadside, at home. And if that's not what you're planning to do, then you have to err a little bit on the side of caution.
Somebody wondered about the contractions, how close should they be together. You answered that a little earlier. Can I leave the hospital after being induced?
No. So it depends on what the induction entails. So the induction really is a three-stage process. The first is ripen the cervix, which would allow you to break the waters, which would allow you to start the oxytocin, which causes the contractions to come on. Some hospitals are now introducing ripening methods, which they are considering letting the patients go home to come back when the contractions come on or when they need to come back to have the waters broken. So there are a couple of different methods of ripening the cervix. You can use a gel. You can use a mechanical device like a balloon catheter. You can use a mechanical device like a rod that is hydrophilic and it stretches the cervix open. So if those are being used, you may be allowed to go home. But again, you check with your hospital and healthcare provider. Yeah.
My baby was oblique in my first pregnancy. I was in labour for 48 hours before being brought in for an emergency section. I'd like to have VBAC on my second baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will the labour feel the same as my first, or would I be better off going into the hospital as early as possible? I'm afraid that I will tear my scar if I leave it too late.
Okay, so a VBAC is a vaginal birth after cesarean, and it's for patients who've had one previous cesarean section, it's certainly a reasonable option. Any patient who's having a VBAC is at risk of uterine rupture. The risk is small, and again, if you're in the hospital setting, you're being very well looked after and monitored for any feature that might indicate that there's a problem with the scar. If somebody is having a VBAC and they've not laboured previously, then it will for all intents and purposes be like their first labour, first delivery. But if you have partially laboured before you ended up having the cesarean section, again, things might move more quickly than they would if it was your first time and you hadn't laboured before. So again, err more on the side of caution, particularly if you've a scar on your uterus as you do from your previous section. It's always better to be in the hospital so that they can monitor you and the baby, because that's not something you can necessarily do terribly well at home. So they'd have you monitored for the baby's heart rate trace would be monitored continuously if you've had a VBAC, to ensure that the baby's well and tolerating the labour. And again, sometimes it's abnormalities in the fetal heart rate trace that indicate that there might be a problem with the scar.
The interesting question here from a texter about trying to conceive and healthy sperm and diet changes, etc., lifestyle changes they should make. Just if you're only joining us, this is something we've just chatted about extensively here with Shane Higgins over the past couple of weeks. If you want to stick Lunchtime Live Making Babies into wherever you get your podcasts, there's a great resource there. All of the different chats and conversations we've had will be available if you want to listen back to some of those, or you can drop us an email, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We're talking about baby movements next Wednesday, so if you have a question for Professor Shane Higgins, Master of the National Maternity Hospital, you can drop it into us by email.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.